Welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Live. Brought to you live from the campus of beautiful West Virginia University and their unique data marketing communications program. With this week, we got Matt Cummings with us. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, I've never asked you guys, how long has this program been going on? And did I describe it correctly? I'm always afraid I jumble the words too much here.
Absolutely. It's actually one of the first integrated marketing communications master's programs in the country. So we've been around, you're going to put me on the spot here exactly, but it's been probably close to 15 years now. I was actually one of the first graduates through the program back in 2006.
And was it hard to get people to understand the idea of integrated marketing and communications and data and all this stuff that you guys talk about here? Because it used to be marketing was just trying to get traffic and sales was closing.
Right.
Now that's become much more complex, and there's become an integrated approach. Sales and marketing. Sales can't just cram out a bunch of leads and then say, I did my job.
Exactly. And marketing can't just deliver them and say that they did their job. They
right.
have to be quality leads. And the creative process is key in that. And that's what integrated marketing communications is really all about.
Okay.
So with that, we have an exciting show to kick things off for this new season. Today, we're talking about that creative process, how data informs and inspires it. And the skills that creatives need to use data in the process, also how to find and use good insights, and making sure that your ideas win at the end of the day. Our guest today is Nathan Perrott, an award-winning designer and creative director with more than 15 years of industry experience developing creative strategy for some brands that you may have heard of, Frito-Lay, Walmart, AT&T, just to name a few. Currently, Perrott is a group creative director at Epsilon, a global marketing agency. Epsilon provides data intelligence and customer insights, technology, including loyalty, email, and CRM platforms, and data-driven creative activation and execution. As a creative director, Perrott and his team are responsible for the development and execution of data-driven creative strategy for AT&T Business with a focus on email, direct mail, and display. He also actively consults on creative execution and big ideas for brands like Arby's, Snickers, Mountain Dew, Doritos, State Farm, just to name a few. He's taught at the Art Institutes for the past 12 years, teaching both design and art director courses, and more recently joined the IMC faculty at WVU, and we're happy to have him. So with that introduction, it's my pleasure to bring into the program Nathan Perrott. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. What a wonderful introduction.
Thanks for helping me with it. You know, on this program, as Paul mentioned, we've talked a lot about data-informed decision-making across a variety of marketing communications platforms and functions. With today's focus on creativity, how does data impact that creative process?
Sure. So data is going to help guide where the creative is going. It sets a foundation for a plan of attack. It helps inform the creative brief, and as we all know, that's where the creative process really starts. So how does it inform specifically? That data is going to support the segments and the personas that we're trying to talk to. So it helps us really understand our audience at a high level, and also into the more granular level of personas. A persona would be like, we know that you're the tech guy at this company, or we know that you're the marketing manager. So data informs as well the messaging, the tone, the CTAs. It also informs how we're going to test our creative. Data is going to confirm that we're using the right channels, that we're talking to the audience in the right way. And that, of course, that impacts the format size of the creative. So when you get to the creative part of this, it's like, We know this campaign is going to tackle these different channels. Well, we have to start building creative for all of those different channels and all of those different format sizes. So a creative brief that is built without data can be limited. You know, it reflects, and that really reflects in the work. Think about a generic offer or a message, right? You probably didn't have that much data to support the messaging hierarchy, but a brief that has data is going to be much more robust and probably way more personal. So you have a lot more pieces to work with. And I like to think of it kind of like as, you know, I'm a big Marvel Comics fan, so it's Bruce Banner versus Bruce Banner's the creator that we're building that doesn't have much data. But when we get data and it's actually good data, now we're the Hulk. Now we're really going to smash some things and make an impact. So maybe
the easier question to start off with was, what doesn't data inform or impact in the creative process? I want to unpack that just a little bit. What do you think is the most valuable thing that data brings to that creative process?
Well, I think it's going to be insights. Data-driven, personalized marketing is going to have a big payout, because over time, that data is going to uncover behavior, which will lead us to more insights. And creative without insight is dead, right? So that data, and this is the fun part of this, data is also going to be used to support our creative instincts, our gut, which creatives love to come to the table and say, hey, we got this insight, and we think this is going to work. And the client comes to us and says, well, prove it. And if we have data to back it up. So there's an example. We were asked to create an email campaign, and the goal was to drive customers to the landing page and get response rates. Mm-hmm. Our instincts told us that we needed to create, like, if we created intrigue, we would get engagement. The client's saying, I want to see the product. I want to see the price. I want to see everything. We go, you know what? We're going to put a box with a ribbon on this and shake it. And there's going to be three words on this email, and it's going to say, open me now. Open it now. So the client, we presented that to the client. They hated it. They were like, you got to be kidding me. This isn't going to work. We convinced
You're begging,
them to let us
right?
do it. Right. They convinced us to let us do it. And the results is we crashed their site. We got a 14% response rate. A really good acquisition campaign is going to have a 2% response rate.
Right.
So now that we were able to convince them to let us use our instincts, we have data that supports, and it's become more of an insight. So data does both of those things for us. And that was a lot of fun. So we get to use that shaky bag. That's what we call it. Just shake the bag and we'll get some response rates.
See what comes out. You know, you touched on this a little bit, but how does data then inform that creative execution?
Well, data, this is kind of the not necessarily a negative. It just adds a whole nother level of complexity. Data means you have more team members, you have more people you're working with, so there's complexity to relationships, there's more information to filter. Data also usually comes out in the form of more versions, which means you have more people working on the thing, you have to come up with nuanced messaging, and, you know, marketing businesses are trying to figure out how to get more bang for their buck, and the more personal you can be with that marketing, the better. And the data informs that, but it becomes very complicated, very fast on the creative execution side. So the success for, you know, companies thinking, well, how do I make this work? How do we navigate this complexity? It really comes from very rigid execution processes and very clear roles of who's going to do what. It's a whole nother conversation in terms of trying to have a creative services team support a complex marketing strategy that's leveraging lots of data. So complexity would be the answer there.
You know, you mentioned the complexity, and you also hear people say, you know, data's taken the heart out of all of this, the human element out of this. And at the end of the day, it's humans selling to humans. What else would you say is a negative impact that you've seen data bring to the creative process?
Yeah, I think, you know, data is really meant to be a guide for the creative process, and our clients may not agree with that, and sometimes they want us to become way more literal with how we use it. So creative teams can easily get overwhelmed, and then they start to use those data points verbatim, right? So there isn't any real thinking around, well, the data says this, so we're just going to take that and drop it in as the key way to communicate to the customer, when really we have to pull out the insight. So that's a big risk. I see that I actually see that happening a lot. Not a lot, but it happens more than you think. I think there's just a lot of exhaustion that comes from, okay, we have all this data. What are we going to do with it? How do we pull insights out of it? Let's just use it the way it is. And then you get a lot of bad marketing that comes from it.
Right.
So you have to keep your creative teams fresh and moving and and try to keep them inspired.
So what are some of the unique skills that creatives need to have in order to effectively and efficiently apply data to their process?
Yeah, so my answer to that's a little higher level, but it's the phrase I like to think of it is, creatives need to know how to build a plane while it's in the air. Data isn't necessarily new, right? But like the need for data isn't new, but the technology driving it, the tech stacks that are used to capture, filter, and report the information, and that's what we're relying on to inform our creative, is always, it's changing rapidly. And so companies are adopting these systems, and ramp up can be slow, and things change a lot. Your creative strategy may be something one day, systems change, an audience list change, you find out that data's dirty. You can't, you know, all of a sudden, you're like, what are we supposed to do with this? So my experience with data is we're all working very hard to leverage it the best way we can, but we're not really sure what the right way to do it is. So you're building the plane in the air. Creatives have to be comfortable shifting gears, and shifting gears is hard. So the unique skills would be nimble, be proactive, be patient, ask questions, help find solutions, and be okay with change. A great team member, you know, you need to be a great team member as this plane is being built. And a lot of creatives have a hard time with that.
And patience is also a very challenging thing, especially when people are looking for those results right away and wanting to see that immediate impact. I know a lot of marketers really struggle with that. You know, I want to shift gears just a little bit. One more question here before we jump into a break. But, you know, data is great. And obviously, you know, the Data Marketing Communications Program has been a focus of this podcast for a while. But it's just one of the tools, right, in the creative process to ensure that our creative ideas win. So in your opinion, what is one of the most valuable tools outside of data in that creative process that's successful?
So my answer to that would be pass the mustard, which is abstract, right? Let me tell you a story about pass the mustard. So we had an awesome opportunity. I had an awesome opportunity to actually design packaging for a new chip flavor for a major brand. That flavor was honey mustard. The brief that we got had a very specific insight. Don't use plastic bottles on the packaging because no one's going to think that's yummy. And we spent the next 3 months intensely trying to build this packaging out, and we landed on a really good idea. I thought, you know, we were very proud of the work, three concepts. So the final step of getting it approved and moving on to the photo shoot is the CMO has to see it. And so we take it into the CMO's office, and she takes one look, and she goes, I want a plastic bottle.
Of course.
I want a plastic bottle. That's how people think about mustard. Why wouldn't we use a plastic bottle? So, you know, the record
rewind months of work, right?
No, I about fall out of my chair. It was nuts. Nobody had taken the time to ensure those key insights in the brief, no plastic, right, had been aligned with the vision of leadership. Right. So if you're talking about the creative process, it's really, if you're going to be successful, that communication has to be locked down, right? Making sure you're asking the right questions and that you're checking the work against the right players throughout the process. We went 3 months and no one laddered it up. I'm not sure if that was self-preservation. I'm not sure why that happened. But in hindsight, we could have easily saved time and money if we had been able to make sure we were aligned. So, you know, the creative process doesn't live in a silo with the creatives. The account team, the clients have a ton of power over the creative process and over the outcome of the creative. So if one of them aren't asking the right questions or cross-checking the insights, things can get really weird really fast. Mm-hmm. I actually have that photo up in my office of just the mustard packaging to remind me to, you know, always pass the mustard, work well with my counterparts, and never assume and ask the right questions. And if you can do that, man, your creative is going to be really strong because you understand the hierarchy of decision makers are all informed. And if you're not feeling comfortable with that, you got to find a way to get there, or your creative is going to be consumed. So that's my pass the mustard story.
Excellent advice. We're going to take a quick break now, Nathan, and we're going to come back, talk more about the creative process, also how to make sure that your ideas win, whether that's in the classroom or in the boardroom. We'll be right back.
And just a quick shout out to our sponsor today, West Virginia University's unique, special online data marketing communications program. It's the first of its kind in the country, first graduate program to focus on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making using data. The Data Marketing Communications Program prepares you for your career by learning those innovative tactics from the people doing them, developing them right now, as well as the award-winning faculty like those we're talking with here today. Learn more. You owe it to yourself. Go to DMC for Data Marketing Communications. DMC.WVU for West Virginia University. .edu. DMC.WVU.edu. Okay, and I just want to point out as we get back to the show here that in honor of your guest's work with Doritos and Fritos, I'm eating a bag of Lay's potato chips right now as we're talking. Just pulled it
and
out.
And Nathan, you can't see them, but I can, and they are empty.
That's right.
So that's a good thing, right?
That's right.
And they are not honey mustard.
I want to be fully aligned with our guest here today. I know you're talking about alignments.
And I'm going to be reaching for one here right at the top of the hour, that's for sure.
That's great.
Let's get back into the creative process. Again, just want to level set here, listening to WVU Marketing Communications today. Our guest is Nathan Perot, Group Creative Director at Epsilon and West Virginia University IMC Instructor. We talked before the break about the creative process and the complexity that goes into that, the complexity of using data in that process. What do you feel is the hardest part of the creative process?
So it's going to be finding that right insight. And this is mm-hmm. where I've seen our students struggle. And quite frankly, I've struggled there and my professional counterparts. On any given day, you'll see it wobble. Because an insight, you know, can come from many different places, research trends, cultural norms, occasions, personal experience. It's a really long list. And then, so once you think you have it, you have to cross-check it against the objectives, the branding standards, the competition. Does your gut think it's the right thing? And that's a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's not just something you can start to do. It's a muscle. You have to build it up. So it's easy to crank out creative that looks good and maybe even sounds good, but without the insight, it won't hold up, and you're going to get chewed up in a client review. Mm-hmm. Creative campaigns that lack insights are easy to spot. We recently had an opportunity to do a very short TV commercial for college football. And I love college football. I'm a big West Virginia fan. I'm a huge Nebraska fan. So we get a call that says, hey, would you do this spot for us? And I'm thinking, okay, this is great. Now, outside of our wheelhouse, but let's do it. And what had happened is the original agency had come in with their creative. It looked okay, but there were no insights to support it. And so when they were asked why should we do this for the spot, they didn't really have a good answer. So, you know, we came in and said, yes, let's do it. We were able to crank it out. We didn't sleep for 2 days because it took us a lot. It took a lot of work to find the right story to sell in what we wanted to do. But, man, it was a lot of fun. And we were able to land on those insights. And thankfully, the clients liked it. So I can say I have a college TV spot now, too. College football TV spot now, too. So, you know, I think the hardest part is really understanding what is an insight and then working hard to find them. And students specifically, you know, it takes a lot of work. And I don't think they understand that early on. But mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, by the time the program is over, they understand. At least that was my experience. So
right. So what makes, you know, we've talked about the need for one, but what makes a good insight?
So I would say simplicity. The goal is to find an insight that is crushingly clear. If it can be clever or unique, that helps too. But simplicity to an insight is a great anchor that usually sparks imagination. You know, if you have to wax the elephant to explain an insight, it's not really an insight. Mm-hmm. Or at least it's not an insight that's going to win. So I participate in a few crowdsourcing platforms, private and public, and they always ask us, what's your insight and what makes it good? So the ideas that win, and I'm happy to say I actually win a lot, are almost always one paragraph at the most. I have one sentence that explains my insight and two sentences maybe to explain why I think it's good. If you use a lot of words to explain it, I don't win. Mm-hmm. I can go back to the 5 years I've been doing it and literally say, okay, I didn't lock it down to a clear insight. So keeping it simple is the way to go. You don't have a lot. It's very relevant to the industry too. You don't have a lot of time to sell your ideas in those conference rooms. The marketing wants it to look good, but it's got to be grounded in a clear insight that aligns to their brief, or you know, things get rough.
And what's the process that you use to find a good insight? Or how do you learn how to do that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I struggled a little bit with this answer. You know, I think there's a combination of things. The first is, if you've been doing, you know, if you're new to this, find a mentor. I can track back to where I started, and I learned how to do this from a handful of a few very talented guys, Stu Hill, Chris Bellinger. These guys just were amazing at whittling down a complex brief or a complex topic into a clear insight. They were had an important role in the Crash the Super Bowl campaign when that first came out, which is easy to say, changed the industry. So find a mentor through a student. Definitely find someone who does this and does it well. You know, read up on it. Of course, practice. If you've been doing it for a while and you're still kind of struggling, I would say have as many side projects as possible. The work can start to grind. You start to lose your passion for that particular product, you know, whatever that is. So have a side hustle. Have something that keeps your creative passion and keeps you looking for ways in to win when it comes to the work you're doing, and that will impact the work you're doing at the office as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, otherwise it's kind of like being a frog in a boiling water, right? You're there, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, things got really rough, and you're like, what happened? Well, I've been doing the same thing for so long, and the insights I'm looking for are just for this particular phone or this particular consumer goods. It's no good. So practice, find a mentor, be ready to work really hard, because there's nothing easy about it.
Good advice. Wrapping things up here, just have one or two more questions. I want you to summarize for us, what are the top three things that will help your creative career, whether we have, you know, young professionals, emerging professionals listening in, or students, what will help your creative career, and what will help your ideas win, whether that be in the classroom or in the boardroom when you're pitching?
So the creative career part, I would start with networking. You know, it's who you know, and then where you are right now, be really good at it. Even if you're just pushing papers, be really good at it and be someone who is an asset to the team, because you never know when in the future that'll come back. So I'd start there. The second one I think would be remember to pass the mustard, right? Remember, know who the players are, know how to have solid communication skills and work with your teams to make sure you're asking the right questions and you've set yourself up for success. Many times, the briefs that you're given from your clients are not strong. You have to go back in and say, we heard you. We think this is what you asked for, and this is what we think you need. There's two different things. You have to have the guts to come in and really, you know, have strong communication skills and then challenge them.
That's a hard conversation sometimes. I mean, I'm on the client side more times than not, and that's a tough conversation to hear and be a part of, but we appreciate that.
Yeah, my experience has been clients don't necessarily like it to begin with, but if you make them look good, right, and if you help them see a new way in, there's usually a positive response. The answer may be no, we're not going to do it, but I've never had an experience where they're like, dude, you're doing too much work. Like, you're thinking about this too hard. Nope. So, you know, build that plane in the air. Learn to be nimble. Learn to work hard. This industry is changing very fast. In a lot of really good ways, but if you're stuck in a system or a process, you're going to have a hard time in this business, because it is rapidly changing due to technology, due to the infusion of data and all these different teams that are coming in and speaking into the strategy and the creative process. You know, our day of being up on top of the mountain as creatives is, you know, by ourselves isn't all there hand in hand now with strategy, with data, and with the clients. So, you know, be ready to build that plane in the air. And then, you know, the other final thought would be, you know, this is for ideas too. Always go for two. So I'm a big Nebraska fan. Nebraska fans know what that means. You're in the game to win it. So always go for two, which means you give the client an idea. After you were sitting down, you say, this is what you want. Okay, here's what you want. And now I think you should consider doing this too. Like, go always try to push it and give them a new angle or more if you can, if it's appropriate. So So that requires drive. That requires a lot of an intentional mentality that says we're going to give them what they ask for, and then we're going to try and push it. So with that football commercial, we gave them a five-second spot, and then we cast a vision for what if you went to the game and actually filmed this for next year, and the guy about fell out of his seat. They didn't ask us to do that, but we pushed it, and it was a big win. So I would say in the classroom and certainly in the industry, you know, always try to see, are we pushing enough? Are we too comfortable? Let's not be comfortable. Let's keep pushing. Let's keep pushing the client. Let's keep pushing the team. So always go for two. And then the idea is that when, you know, just lock it down on those insights, like be smart. Don't come in soft. Soft is so easy to see. So come in strong with your ideas.
Love it. Thank you so much. Great advice, Nathan. I appreciate you spending some time with us here today. And I thank you for listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today from West Virginia University. Hope you found today's episode as informative as I have. And until next time, keep passing that mustard, keep building that plane, and take care.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a bi-weekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. Only on the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.